All right, let's get this bad boy going. Welcome to episode 430 here on the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Before we dive into today's masterclass expert interview, I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go, while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there. What's going on, guys? I am pumped. I am excited. I got a little bit of a different twist for you on the masterclass here in the Flip Empire Show. A buddy of mine, Steven Pesavento, recently invited me to be on a panel interview for his podcast, the Investor Mindset Podcast. And it was a lot of fun. You know, I was joined by some cool friends of mine, Don Costa and Brent Daniels. And just Steven did a really good job of moderating and interviewing us on this panel. And we talked about we gave a market update from our perspectives, right? And Brent is out of Phoenix, super, super successful, great guy, high energy, a lot of knowledge. Don Costa has been in this game for a while. Him and I have known each other, you know, and so he's got a great podcast as well and mastermind and all that. And collectively, we put our heads together and we came at this, we agreed on a lot of things and we came at this from a few different angles and just shared our insight. And, you know, we gave a market update when it comes to flipping and wholesaling. We talked about team building, systems, automation, raising private money. We talked about best practices within our wholesaling operations now, what we see working, what's not working. Really, really good. It was a lot of fun to be on this panel interview. We just had some laughs and went back and forth. So highly encourage you to check it out. I reached out to Steven, asked him if I could share this on the Flip Empire Show, and he was more than willing. So really shout out to Steven. Appreciate you allowing me to publish this on my show. I thought it was you know, really, really good content that can help a lot of you. So again, this is a panel interview that I was joined by Brent Daniels, Don Costa, with Steven Pesavento as the host on the Investor Mindset Podcast. So I hope you enjoy it. Let's dive right in.
I mean, hey, let's kick this bad boy off, guys. Let's go. Excited to have you guys back. Excited to be here and share a little bit about what's going on in the house, in the flipping house. Apparently, I don't know how to spell here. The flipping houses and wholesaling sector here. We're going to have some more folks obviously joining us live and on the recordings, but we've got a phenomenal panel here of expert house flippers and wholesalers, and I'm going to have them give a little introduction to themselves here in just a second, but you guys know I'm Steven Pesavento of the Investor Mindset, and I mean, I've been flipping houses and wholesaling for just a few years, just going on 4 years now. One of my mentors, Don Costa, is on the line, so excited to have him here, and I've done, you know, just over 200 deals, but my business has changed dramatically. I've focused a lot of my effort on multifamily now, and we're doing lower volume, higher margin deals on the wholesaling front. And so what I'm really excited about is to hear from our panel on what's going on in their local market. How are things being impacted by what's going on? What's happening on the marketing front? And what kind of systems are they using today that they weren't using before? So we're obviously going to get into all that and more. Definitely want to hear some questions from folks in the audience. If you're just joining us, make sure you hit to all attendees and let us know where you're coming in from. So without further ado, let's dive into things. Starting with you, Brent, why don't you give a quick little 1-minute intro for anyone who somehow doesn't know who Brent Daniels is?
Yeah. Hey, guys. It is Brent Daniels. I am Mr. TTP. That stands for talk to people. It's a business philosophy of just being super proactive. Every single day, you should be talking to new people to put into your pipeline so that you can build some consistency in your business. I work out of Phoenix, Arizona. I do pretty much all of Arizona. My company does just over $1 million a year, and I get really mad if I can't keep 40% or more of that. So profitability is number one for me. Absolutely. Try to stay as lean as possible, as proactive as possible. And it's an honor. I'm here with the titans of the podcast world here with Don and Alex with their podcasts. If you guys haven't checked those out, you certainly need to. They're just they're the best in the business. Flip Empire and Flip Talk with Don. So make sure you guys check those out. It is I'm humbled and honored. Thanks for letting me on here. And I'll pass it off to these two juggernauts.
All right. Don, give us a little intro, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, Don Costa here, 17 years in this game, lost everything once, had to rebuild it again because I was a tool and a fool and arrogant the last time around. So this time around, we'll get into that, but I took it a little bit more seriously and yeah, just looking to give as much as I possibly can. Glad to be here with some amazing people, I will say.
And that you do. You're definitely a big giver. And Alex...
Yeah, so first off, Stephen, thank you for inviting me. Thank you for putting this on with these two awesome people. Tough acts to follow there. I look up to both these gentlemen, you know, in many ways. And I see what you're doing, Stephen, with the podcast and in your business. So really grateful to be on. So I've been in this business 15 years. Done all types of deals. Wholesaling has always kind of been our niche, my bread and butter. I discovered many, many years ago that I think I was put on this earth to give and to help as many people as possible. And the podcast has been an amazing platform for me to just kind of share my thoughts, share the good, the bad, and the ugly, because despite what you may see on Facebook, it's not always, you know, peaches and rainbows. There are setbacks in this business like there are in any business. And I pride myself on, again, just being very real and authentic. So yeah, I'm just, I also co-lead a coaching and mastermind group called Ascend. And again, it's another avenue for me to really tap into what really fulfills me, which is working with people. So yeah, it's an honor to be here, just like Brent said.
Absolutely. Well, love it that you guys are here. It's been amazing watching you guys' journey and you guys grow. So what a lot of people are wondering is, since we last talked, we were just kind of heading into COVID. Brent was sharing, Don was sharing, we had a few other guests on, kind of what was changing for them in their local market. Obviously, we're, you know, 2.5 months into this thing that we've got going, this life change, we've got to accept that it's here because it is. And so, Brett, tell us what changes have you seen in your business, and what has been really working and not working in your world?
Love it. I'll start with the not working or just, a mistake I made early on. I think that I was trying to be too aggressive with my pricing, reducing it. I was reducing my prices too much on my wholesale side, just because I thought that there would be a big chunk of the market taken out for my cash buyers and the cash buyers that were left. We really, really, really wanted to make sure that we served them and made sure that they were getting great deals. And then they go and assign it for 20 grand and 30 grand on top of our deals, right? So 50 grand lesson learned there. Some people call that the stupid tax. But surprisingly, you know, Phoenix has been really resilient. We're now, you know, making sure that we're pushing even more on our pricing to make sure that we get as much as possible from every single deal. But that was one of the things that I saw was an issue. I think I just got a little bit too aggressive with making sure that they were getting really good deals, so they stuck around, not knowing the uncertainty. I wanted to make sure that I was making really good deals for the biggest buyers in my town. The good thing is pouring in, and this is something that I've been called out by my team and by, you know, having a coaching program and having podcasts and YouTube channel and everything can distract you at times if you're not time blocking for your real estate business. And so I started really getting into that and pouring more into my acquisition managers, making sure that they understand that we are the biggest buyer in town. We're the baddest buyer in town. They are the decision makers when they are talking. They don't have to run it by me. Give them that certainty and just make sure that they're super likable when they're on the phone. So that's really the main things, is just pouring more into the team, making sure that we're focused, time blocking for the company, and making sure that we're rock and rolling. And it's been great. The business has, we're up 25% on our goals, above our goals, which is great, even though we took that $50,000 hit, which would have really taken us to the next level. But yeah, it's 2020 has been going really well.
That is so good to hear. I noticed we were doing the same thing. We were really, really conservative on the numbers and the offers, and yet buyers are still buying. And so we ended up probably losing out on some deals because we were going a little bit too conservative. Don, what have you seen?
You know, I want to preference, like, I think this is a state by state thing. Like Phoenix is super, super hot. I think Texas stayed super, super hot. I know like places like, Pittsburgh, I have some buddies out there that got shut down completely. California, we were some of the first on lockdown. So we got kind of kicked a little bit at first, more so than some other states. And we had to adjust accordingly. Once we got a few weeks past the initial shutdown for our state, we started to see buyers get a little more aggressive and things start to pick up. So I don't think any of us should feel bad about being careful or conservative in the beginning. I was very vocal about the fact that, you know, I went through 2008. My biggest mistake was that I took things for granted, and I wasn't proactive, and I wanted to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And that's what I did. And I think had things went bad, those of us who prepared for the worst would have been in a good spot. And I think those of us who did, and now that things are actually going pretty good, are actually better off for it. You know, we've learned a little bit more about our business. We've repositioned. We've done some things. So, but in my market, the residential side, the retail side is still fairly hot. You know, the demand's still there. We're not seeing a whole lot of price reductions unless you're at a higher end price point. You know, inventory is still relatively low. Our cash buyers are aggressive. You know, we're seeing some good momentum. My whole thing again is, like we're talking about before this, is we just don't know what the overall impact is going to be 6 months from now or a year from now. And so I still want to proceed with caution. I want to say that, you know, I'm tongue in cheek right now saying, like, we're hyper aggressive right now. We just brought on 4 VAs. We're kicking up our marketing. We're going to be hyper aggressive. But at the same time, I'm going to be looking over my shoulder, just watching what the market's doing, what the economy's doing, to make sure that I can pivot, not to use that word that's been way overused, but I can readjust if I need to, if there is a change in the real estate market.
Yeah, huge. Alex, anything to add?
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, Don, if you hear me use the word pivot, like try to like virtually slap me, you have my permission. So I totally agree. But yeah, no, so it's interesting. Let me preface my comments by saying I have made a ton of mistakes and I continue to make mistakes, and that's okay because I learn from them, right? But I think one of the things that as a team we did well is we controlled the narrative. And what I mean by that is as soon as this thing hit, I was on the phone with my team. I was letting them know that, hey, you know, I'm walking alongside you. I think oftentimes as visionaries, as CEOs, it's so easy for us to kind of be in the background or like driving the ship, but like at a high level. And what I did well was I rolled up my sleeves and I jumped in there. And what I mean by jumped in there, I'm making calls to buyers, I'm making calls to sellers. I mean, egos aside, you roll up your sleeves and do what you got to do. And I think my team seeing me jumping in there when normally I really wouldn't, right? I think that it picked up some momentum. And what we did was we immediately started calling our top buyers. Hey, how are you seeing the market? How are you adjusting your buy box? What are you looking for? We essentially started to shop for them, and just, we were more laser focused with our marketing versus sending out tens of thousands of mailers every month. We just got super, super dialed in with our marketing. We started looking at our KPIs. Hey, what's produced for us over the course of the last 3 to 6 months? Let's double down on that. Who are the buyers that are still active? Who are the ones that are on the sidelines? What was interesting is that almost here in Miami overnight, we went from a seller's market to a buyer's market. And our buyers immediately adjusted, right? I'm not going to use that P word. They adjusted and they tightened their buy box about 15 to 20%. However, sellers weren't so quick to adjust. And one of the things that I think, you know, we did that has worked is our acquisition manager will find a news clipping or a URL from some credible source talking about like the housing market, how it might crash. And we'll text that to sellers and we'll say, hey, we just came across this because what we found, at least here in Miami, I don't know how it was in Phoenix and in California, we kind of had to educate the home sellers about COVID and how this could potentially impact the market. And because our buyers are savvy, the sellers not so much. And so our buyers were offering 20% less than they were 90 days ago, but sellers were still asking the same exact thing. Now we're starting, at least here in South Florida, we're starting to see sellers loosening up and become more realistic with what's actually going on in the marketplace.
Yeah, I've definitely seen people start to make a little bit of an adjustment from the investor standpoint. If they're owner occupants, not as much. It seems like people are maybe a little bit wary of what's going to happen with COVID. But you know, I've got a lot of people sitting thinking, hey, well, maybe in a couple months, things are going to be better. And you know, our acquisitions team, I'm jumping on the phones as well and talking to some of these folks just to kind of get a feeling for it. I think that's a really smart thing to do because you want to know what's actually happening, get that pulse. So from a marketing perspective, Alex, have you adjusted the types of marketing that you're doing today versus what you're doing, say, 90 days ago pre-COVID?
Yeah, we've always been heavy into direct mail. And, you know, 6 months ago, we would be doing backflips if we can get a 0.5% response rate. I mean, just direct mail is extremely competitive. We have pretty much shut off that channel aside from some really, really niche list. We're relying heavily on text message marketing. We're relying heavily on referrals. You know, one of the things we've done is we've gone back to all the sellers that we've closed deals with, picked up the phone, asked them if they know of anybody that might be looking to sell. And we've also relied heavily on working with other wholesalers in our market, which is always something that we've done, but we've never really leaned into it. So I created a private Facebook group for essentially wholesalers and fix and flip investors in my market. And the idea behind that Facebook group is to give, to add value, to answer questions. And we've been able to joint venture and do more deals collaborating with people. I'm a big advocate of collaboration over competition. I know these guys would agree with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brent, what about you? What are you seeing different?
Alex hit it right on the head. Referrals, man. It is like free money. I mean, that's the evolution I see. Is as you're sourcing your own deals, you become the guy or gal in your market, and then you can help people dispo their deals. It's hugely powerful. I mean, I'm in here. One of my best friends is Jamil Damji with Keegley. I see that the way that they've ran their business, I mean, it's almost 100% off of referrals. So I love that Alex brought that up because nobody talks about that, especially going back to the sellers that you worked with before. Listen, people hang out with people like them, right? So there is potential that these people have friends or family or aunts or whatever that have distressed situations as well. So I think that's absolutely brilliant. With us, what I noticed is I kind of cleaned house with my texting crew. I got rid of the guys that were doing it and put in new guys, and all of a sudden, boom, four deals. Right? There's something there. I think that the comfort zone maybe, or maybe they just got too robotic with it. Maybe it just, their brain wasn't stimulated enough. So they were kind of getting bored with the repetition. So I cleaned house with that and instantly that helped out. I'm moving. I'm getting rid of some of the cold callers that I've had for a couple of years and freshening it up. Not because they're not getting results. I just feel like maybe there's more juice in there. There's more deals that they should be getting that they're not. So I'm looking at personnel changes with some of these parts that aren't, you know, acquisition manager or dispo guy. And it seems to be working out really well. Listen to this, Alex. In Arizona, right, we're 0.03% response rate on mail. We've been sending it out at 1.2%. Like, wow. It's bananas. It really is. Wow. It is bananas.
Where's that banana?
Yeah, it's bananas. It really is. And, you know, we haven't really converted. We're getting a lot of calls, a lot of people interested. They're in the pipeline. We don't do a tremendous amount, maybe $2,500 a month worth of mail, which you guys will be like, oh my gosh, that's like
that was nothing, my yesterday.
Right? Yeah, that's, yeah. That's like nothing. I get it. And I think the other thing is, anybody that says no to us on the phone, or if they've given us a little bit of conversation from a texting standpoint, we're sending them a blind offer and just letting it sit there. We're just literally like a mailing a blind offer, click to mail, set it up with our investor fuse podio, and boom, right? So and that's been generating leads coming back to us for because we started that at the beginning of the year. So I think it's really strong. I suggest anybody, if they say no, they don't want to sell, and it's a property that's in rough condition, send them a blind offer. I'm not saying they're going to sign it, but it's a marketing piece. It's just there for them to keep. And it's different than just sending a postcard or a letter. Listen, I'm not the mail guy. You can talk to these gentlemen about that. They're pros. But from a cold calling standpoint, phenomenal. Niche lists have been the best. Driving for dollars, easy. And we've been targeting smaller markets surrounding Phoenix and getting a really, really, really good response.
That's great. Don.
The blind offer. I want to jump in here real quick, but Alex, you tried the blind offer thing early on as well, didn't you?
We did. Here's what we found. I would love to, and that's right, because we were on another panel about a month and a half ago. The campaign didn't do well from a conversion standpoint as far as us getting more deals, but what it did was it like reignited conversations with sellers that had gone completely ghost on us. And so we took a list of 100 and something blind offers we sent about 2 months ago, and probably about a good 15 to 20% of those are now in our follow-up campaign, active follow-up campaign again. Wow. So I'd love to say we converted a bunch of deals. That wasn't the case, but it reignited some conversations.
Yeah, I think it's a long-term strategy. You know what I mean? It's just planting the seed. It's letting it sit there. I've had people call me back after 3 years, right? You know what I mean? Listen, that's not going to make or break your business, but it could add, you know, 5 or 10 deals if you're sending out enough a year, which, you know, we average 27,000 a deal. So I'll take it. I'll take an extra, you know, 6 figures.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Huge. Don, what about you? What have you been seeing differently?
You know, for a while there, again, I want to say like it depended on when your state like locked the doors, right? So for a minute there, our marketing just like died. Sellers were calling and saying, hey, we're not even interested in making a decision right now, blah, blah, blah. But again, since that time, since everything's kind of settled in, things started to go back to normal, we're seeing more momentum. We're back up to about 10,000 pieces a week in direct mail, down from about 150,000 a month. So we're hitting about $40,000 to $50,000 and 50,000 pieces a month right now. Getting some good results from that. We, like I mentioned, that almost weeks ago now, a little over a week ago, we hired four VAs to go through and do follow up, you know, answer inbound calls, do all that kind of stuff. They're actually the best thing I've done so far. Out of four of them, I think three of them are going to be really, really strong. One may not make it, but the three that are strong are having some phenomenal conversations, reigniting conversations, calling dead leads, calling, you know, follow-up leads, and really kind of just shaking out our database, which a lot of stuff, again, those dead conversations are starting to come back to life. So whether you're sending out a blind contract or you're having somebody just go through and just randomly cold call your database, I think you need to be shaking the bush, shaking the tree, and just getting those conversations going again, because life changes. It evolves, especially now. You know, people are taking a hard look in the mirror at their situation and making decisions that they normally would have put off. And we're starting to see some momentum from that.
Yeah, that's huge. Yeah. I think the biggest thing that we've been doing that's really been working is just follow up on our existing leads. We were sending 100,000 mailers a month for quite a long time. And then we switched to primarily just cold calling and text messaging, going the opposite direction of what had gotten us here, because direct mail wasn't really hitting it. And we've just been hitting our database hard with direct phone calls, throwing it in the dialer, calling through, opening up those conversations as if we know who we're calling, but we're searching Podio as they answer to find out that information. And it's been amazing because, you know, we've been kicking up stuff from 2-3 years ago that we haven't talked to, that wasn't on a follow-up, that maybe fell off somewhere along the way. Yeah. And when those people do answer the phone and they do have some kind of interest, That is really what you're looking for. And we, a couple land deals that may turn into something as well. So that's definitely something you guys should hit, especially if you've got the database. There's no reason you're not contacting those people, because they're definitely more likely to sell than some random owner occupant on a random list that you got.
Steven, so, and to piggyback really quickly on that point, what people need to understand is that the most, and this might sound obvious, but I see so many people focused on lead generation and marketing, which is an important aspect of the business, obviously. But the most expensive lead is the one you don't have. Tap into your existing database. One of the things that we do that's been effective is once a month, on the first of the month, we'll do a download of all of our existing leads, including the dead ones. We'll load it into Mass, which essentially is kind of like a plugin with Gmail. And we'll send out the 9-word email. Are you still interested in insert the blank? Are you still interested in selling your home? Are you still interested in whatever that might be? And what that does is you're not going to convert like from that email to like a contract, but again, it's going to restart conversations. You're going to get more in your follow-up, and now you can take it from there. So I see so many people focused on lead gen and not enough on follow-up with their existing leads, which they've already paid for, whether in time or dollars.
Hey, Alex, why do you email as opposed to text?
We do both. We do both.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, matter of fact, we get with text, but email, it's free and it's just another way to potentially touch them.
So you're going to text them and email them. Is it the same day?
Not same day. No. So we'll do an email broadcast on the first, and then we'll do a text broadcast on the 15th.
I love it. I'm going to implement. Yeah. I'm writing that down.
Yeah. That's huge. I wrote it down as well. Never heard of the 9-word email. I like that.
Google it. It's a thing. I forgot who came up with it. Some guy, Dean something. He's a big marketer, big podcast guy. But the 9-word email has such a crazy response rate, because it's usually a binary answer, yes or no. What you're trying to do, conversation to the next step.
Are you putting the 9 words in the subject, or is that in the body?
No, that's in the body. That's
so what's the subject?
The subject is just hey or hi or FYI or something super like, you know.
Don't share this.
Right, right. Ninja. Exactly. Ninja. Exactly. Or we've even tested the subject line question mark, like literally just a question mark.
Wow.
And that gets a really high open. Cool.
Yeah. This is good stuff for everybody out there. And I'm telling you, I mean, you're in Miami, Alex. Is that your main market?
Yep.
I mean, that's a fist fight. Don, you're in California. Everything's a fist fight there. Right. I'm in Phoenix. It's a fist fight. Steve, are you in Colorado?
Raleigh. Huh? Yeah, my market's Raleigh, North Carolina. And it's not quite as hot as California or Miami, but it's definitely a lot hotter than it was 3 years ago when I entered that market. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, for sure. And everybody watching and listening to this, whatever, if you're in a smaller market, I think that there's huge advantages to it. Really focus in and find the worst houses in your community, and you should be obsessed with those. Obsessed. Now, can you run out of it? Can you not build a million-dollar business in some markets? Maybe. I don't know. But it's if you've got – I know when I make calls, we've called in Huntsville, Alabama – we've called in Palm Beach, right, Florida, and Port St. Lucie. We've called in Seattle. We've called in Orlando. And I'm telling you, the smaller markets, like my prospectors love it. They love it. They're like, oh my gosh, people haven't got like a million calls. People haven't, you know, people are willing to talk to me. It's phenomenal. They love going into those markets. So if you're in a smaller market, go hard, go hard. And if you're in a bigger market, also go hard. So I don't know what I'm talking about here, but
double down.
Be proactive. You clearly do.
Yeah.
You definitely know what you're talking about, my friend.
Yeah.
Don, on the personnel side, have you made any changes other than you added those 4 callers? Did you get rid of your local folks that were doing that same role?
Well, to a certain degree, we had gotten to a point where we're closing over the phone very, very much so for the last probably year. And we have kind of had the position be kind of lead manager, follow-up, closer, like all in one encompassing. And so now we're having the cold callers do kind of the front end grind of the work. And I just want the closer focused on closing. And that's pretty much it at this point in time. So I have cut my organization, not significantly, but enough. You know, I kind of use the opportunity as the time to take a hard look at, you know, who were my best performers and who were just kind of getting by. And like something Brent said, you know, sometimes there's a term I heard years ago, it's easier to create new life than it is to resurrect the dead. right? Mm. And that there, that goes a long way in relationships and employees and everything. You could use that across your life, that sometimes it's easier to create something new. And there's something magical about this industry and being new and having that optimistic naivety that, that I think when you bring in a texter or a cold caller that has that, that fresh look and desire in them, they're going to excel. They're going to go after deals that can't be done because they don't know it can't be done, and they're going to get them, you know, whereas something that's seasoned and been, somebody's been in this business for a while and gotten beat up a little bit and realized it can't be done, they're going to get in their own head and they're not going to do it. So I've kind of done the same thing as far as, you know, just kind of kind of vamping how I do things, doing the virtual thing. I'm going to add some more virtual people for sure. And just being very picky and choosy about who's going to sit in the seat in my office from this point in time. And then trying to run a lot more lean. You know, I ran an expensive organization. I'm not going to lie there for a while. And it's like, well, we're making great money right now, spending a lot less. How can I continue to do that? And that's how I'm going to just continue to look at this moving forward.
Yep.
I love that. So for the folks out there who are curious, as somebody who was doing in-person appointments exclusively before that time of, you know, switching over for the last year, what's been the key differences on the offers that you make over the phone? And I'm sure, Brent, I'm sure you'll have some feedback on this. Alex, I'm sure you'll have some feedback as well.
Yeah. So on my end, I can't proclaim to be the expert when it comes to doing deals on the phone. Don't get me wrong. We have done our fair share of deals on the phone, but pretty much we've always been face to face. And when COVID hit, it's one of those things that, like, I wish I would have been as smart as Don and Brent and been doing more deals, you know, virtually over the phone, because it would have just been a natural progression. For us, we had to adjust there. I'm not going to use that P word again. We had to adjust quickly because obviously we weren't meeting with sellers face to face. And what I found, some of the mistakes that we made when it came to doing deals on the phone is we were essentially taking them through the sales process, and then we were trying to present an offer to them on the spot, you know. And what I found was giving like a 15 to 30 or 45 minute cushion for us to actually run some numbers, get an offer dialed in on DocuSign, and then resetting the appointment and saying, hey, why don't we set an appointment to speak in 45 minutes or an hour? That was a game changer for us, because when we were actually just trying to go from start, like from a hello to, hey, let's get the contract signed, we were just failing miserably. So again, we've done our deals over the phone, but we've just always been face-to-face, for better or worse.
Yeah, if possible, FaceTime with them. Like if they're really scared, if they were, I mean, it really like sinks in the relationship. They see you, you see them, FaceTime them. If your phones aren't compatible, then do a Skype, do a Zoom, do something where you can get in front of them and make sure that you're pre-qualifying all your leads, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to be spending time with people that won't do any business with you. So condition of the property, timeline to sell, motivation, and the price. You find out those four things on every single lead, you're going to be able to convert those over the phone, right? The business wholesaling or source, let's not even call it wholesaling, sourcing deals comes down to lead generation, conversion, and exit strategy, right? Disposition, whatever you want to do there. So that second part, that conversion part, is so critical. And you need to make sure that every question that you're asking is coming back to one of those four pillars of pre-qualifying. Condition, timeline, motivation, price. That'll help you to organize your thoughts. Make sure that you're not just rambling, because we all get into that. We all start rambling when somebody's nice to us on the phone and they're a stranger. We're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. They love me. I'm going to get the biggest deal ever. And it turns out they don't have any equity or any interest to sell. So make sure all this is strategy. All of it has to come back to asking about those four things. And really, you got to find out, what is their problem? Do they have a problem you can solve? If they want to downsize, if they want to upsize, if they own 57 properties and want to sell them all, that's not motivation. Dig deeper, find out what their pain is. If they don't have pain, then move on to somebody that does and has a problem that you can solve.
Boom.
He nailed it. You know, just to piggyback on one thing, and I want everybody to hear me loud and clear. Most people accept the surface level answer a homeowner gives them on the phone about why they're looking to sell. And they need to go at least two or three more questions deeper to ultimately find out what's the reason that person picked up the phone and called you. Even the ones that say, well, I'm calling you because, you know, you sent me a postcard and you said you can offer it. We never hear that, right? that person might have motivation. So don't just take that surface level answer. Take them through the process and dig deeper. You got to dig deeper because, you know, as John Martinez says, no pain, no sale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our average time on the in the queue, I would say, you know, for the call to the contract is about 14 days. Like, we get some that are a little quicker than that. Obviously, we get some that take longer, and then we have some that go into follow-up. But when we switch transition to closing over the phone and we start tracking the KPIs of that, our average is about 14 days from the first call to the actual close. You know, we go through the information gathering, rapport building, getting to the why, and we've learned not to rush it. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're able to buy as well as we do over the phone versus boots on the ground. Is boots on the ground, when you're at the home and you've sat there for 3 hours, you're bound and determined to get the contract before you leave. On the phone, you don't have that same sense of urgency. We obviously want to get it to the finish line, but it's a little bit easier to say, let me do some research and give you a call back, and then call back and have a conversation and kind of dial things in a little tighter with the seller and feel them out a little bit more and not feel like you have to get that contract before you leave. So that's been huge for us. And we've actually found we buy a little deeper by understanding that.
It's good. That's such a big thing. Yeah, I know a lot of people run into challenges with that, but it's just changing that mindset, the way that you're thinking about it, to realize that, oh, hey, it's totally possible for us to do this and we can succeed buying over the phone exclusively. So Alex, tell me, what else are you doing to make sure that you're positioned really well for the future, regardless of whether things go in the direction of home prices continuing to rise or whether, you know, the market starts to fall out?
Yeah, great question. What immediately comes to mind for me is I'm keeping a close eye on that P&L. You know, we're always so focused on generating more revenue, closing more deals, but there's two ways to make money. You make more money or you cut expenses. And I had already, after reading Profit First at some point last year, I went through that exercise of, like, it was painstaking, literally print out transaction detail for the entire year, go line item by, put a P next to everything that generates profit. You put an R next to something that can be replaced with a cheaper alternative, or you put a U next to unnecessary expenses. I shaved off over $4,000 a month in expenses. That's almost $50,000 a year to the bottom line just by shaving those things off. And we've continued. Once COVID hit, I had already been doing those things. I looked at it even deeper. Hey, is this producing profit? Like, is this working? And so a healthy business is always looking at the numbers, the P&L part of that, obviously your balance sheet as well. So looking at that, just trimming what's not, just I'm pushing the envelope. Hey, how can we do things better, cheaper, better, faster without sacrificing quality or integrity? Right. And then just constantly pushing that and pushing that. So honestly, that there's several other things we've done, but that's probably the main one, is just make sure that, you know, you're not just throwing money out the window. You're keeping eye on expenses. And then you're trying to see, are there additional profit centers within what we're already doing and paying for? Right. So could you partner with a local realtor, right, where you get a certain percentage of their commission if you don't work, you know, create, or you don't do retail leads? Could you sell a package of dead leads to another investor in your market? Or the opposite, could you reach out to a wholesaler that doesn't have an effective follow-up system, and could you basically take over their leads and then maybe give them a percentage of the deal of anything you closes? That's a way to inherit a bunch of leads and not have to necessarily pay for them. So it just, COVID has really forced us as a team to get more creative and think outside the box. Which is something we should have been doing anyways. It shouldn't have taken a pandemic to really force us to look at the numbers harder and to get more creative with what we're already doing.
But I think sometimes it's like you need this emergency to, like, shake you awake to realize, like, oh snap, things have been going just fine. I've been comfortable, but I really like this person. This person's been great to my team, but they're really not producing at the level they could be, and they're costing me way more. So I've got to make that cut, even though it's hard. But because you're in a pandemic, all of a sudden you say to yourself, now's the time, I've got to do it.
And so, you know what's last thing I'll say, and then I'll shut up and I'll kick it over to these guys. One thing that I heard about a year ago that has been so impactful for me is look at each one of your team members and ask, knowing what I know about them, would I rehire them? And if the answer is not a hell yes, you should really consider letting that person go, because they're going to thrive somewhere else in a better seat. And know that, you know, you failed them, because you're ultimately the one that put them in their position. It's not them that's failed. It's you as the visionary, as the entrepreneur, as the CEO that's failed them.
Perfect.
Yeah, such good advice.
1,000%. Yep. Nailed it. Mic drop.
Yeah, Alex, you're on fire, brother. I don't know what you ate this morning, but I want some. Jeez Louise.
It's the beach, man. It's the beach.
Yeah. It's the beach. I'm telling you, man, you were just on fire today. And I will add to what Alex was saying about that profit first. What I do, I take it to the extreme. If I keep 2 months in reserves, okay? I keep any commissions owed in reserves. Anything above that number, I transfer mm-hmm. it to another account. I get it out of there. Yeah. I put it in, I get rid of it. Because one of the things that I found was once I had multiple, like hundreds of thousands in an account, you start kind of feeling comfy a little bit, mm-hmm. right? And then you start getting stupid. And then you start buying things for 10 or 15 or 20 grand that you really don't need, or hiring somebody that you really don't need, and you're not really getting the most out of the team that you have. And so that prevents all of it. I just take it out so that there's never a situation where I'm feeling comfortable and cozy. I'm always feeling hungry because I'm like, oh no, we only have 2 months in the account. We got to get going. And that's, I'll do it on a daily basis. I'll do it 3 times a day, depending on when the closing comes in. I mean, I'm just obsessed with making sure that the money goes to my family and to buying assets, because that's really the whole point of this thing. I see way too many people that do $400,000, $500,000, $800,000, $1 million a year and keep $100,000. It's silly. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like this business is set up to serve us and it is our vehicle to buy assets. So that's my, and by the way, guys, I got to get out in about 6 minutes. And I'll turn it over to these guys, but this has been phenomenal.
So before you leave us, Brent, obviously you're a wealth of knowledge. You've been making some big changes. What is your take on how somebody can really step up in their business right now to take advantage of the opportunity that's there and make sure that they are thriving?
Yep.
Not only now, but well into the future.
You know, I listened to this really great podcast about energy and the things that energize us and the things that take our energy, right? And I think a lot of us spend way too much time hallucinating in our head, and it's taking up way too much energy as opposed to just picking up the phone and making that call, for just texting that, for just pouring into your staff, for just, you know, just communicating more and getting, if you can transfer your thoughts of, oh, this is going to be exhausting, or this is going to be, oh, I dread this and all that, to something that actually energizes you, gives you that energy, you're going to totally have a different perspective. You're going to be on fire every single day, and you're going to just make huge strides in your business. So really watch what is pulling your energy away and what is giving you the energy to keep going and keep pushing forward, because that's really what it is. It's not time management. It is a bit priority management, but it's more energy management. You know what I mean? If you're going to be making your cold calls, get into a position where you're making it when you have the most energy and let it fuel you. I am telling you, people are shocked every single day. New TTP students are shocked every day. They're like, I just made my first round of cold calls. This is so much fun. I'm having so much fun. This is crazy. I want to do it all the time. And then all of a sudden they stack that and stack that and stack that and have a really good time. So this business is so incredible. It can change your life. It's literally a cash machine. I mean, I feel really bad for the 99.9999% of people that don't know about wholesaling or real estate investing or flipping. It's really, if you look at it, a really small community. And, you know, I feel bad for anybody that's not in it. But for the people that are in it, I love them all.
And you you serve them well. Don, what's your take on that question? What do you think people can do to make sure they thrive now and in the future?
It's hard to follow that, right? So, I mean, obviously mindset, you know, I'll just hammer it back on that. I mean, mindset is huge. And that's, I think we're going to all echo the same thing. You got to get past that imposter syndrome. I think we all kind of fight with that voice in our head that says we can't do it. You know, what the world, the taking in the garbage that the world is spewing, you know, from time to time, you know, making sure you have the right counselors, advisors around you, the right leaders, the right influencers, the right information coming in. And then just knowing that, you know, we all have the power to be anybody we want to be, any way we want to be, have anything we want to have, and just go out there and make it happen. You're going to get kicked in the butt. You're going to get knocked around. That's part of the journey. That's something that I live for and thrive for now. You know, somebody asked me on a talk earlier today, like, can you name a failure in the last 12 months? And I was like, I can't. My mind doesn't work that way. I can name a few lessons. Right? Some ways I don't want to do things anymore, but I don't look at it as a failure. And I actually thrive for the opportunity to learn and to learn better ways of doing things and learn better ways of making money in this business. And once you kind of shift to that direction, that every part of this journey is an opportunity to become more, to become better at what you do, I think you're going to go a long way.
Such big, important ideas here. Alex, you have something you want to add there?
No, just that this panel's pretty awesome. I mean, these gentlemen are amazing. Seriously, like I always have the mindset, and I know Brent's got to run here. So Brent, it's really, really good seeing you, brother. Always have the mindset, and I think everybody listening and watching this should, is that you can always learn and pick up something from everybody you interact with, even if it's just a little bit of a different way of thinking about something. So just listening to you guys talk, I mean, I'm already thinking a little bit different. And if everybody that's taking the time to watch this, because it's an investment of time, if you have that mindset, you're going to, if you just grow a little bit every single day, you're going to be a completely different person in 6 to 12 months.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Guys, I got to run. Everybody out there, make sure that you are subscribing to Flip Talk, Flip Empire. It is phenomenal. How many do you guys come out with a week?
Twice a week.
Yeah. Awesome. It is worth every, I mean, it's just gold. So, and I want to be on there, guys. I'll reach out to you guys. We'll do some work. But Stephen, thank you so much, brother. Really, really great. And you guys take it from here.
Take care, buddy.
See you guys. Appreciate it. See you, Brent. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you guys, it's so important that we stay in the right state of mind, because that's how you thrive. All these tactics and strategies only work if you're in the right mind state to be able to go and actually execute. And so it's so important. Thank you guys both for being mentors to so many people and sharing all these great ideas with us here. I mean, I'm ripping notes myself on what I can do and make changes in my business. And I think you guys are probably doing the same. So for everyone watching, there's no reason you shouldn't be ripping notes and figuring out what changes you're going to make, and at least take away one thing from every conversation or event or mastermind that you go to. So, Don, I know that you happen to have gone through a major loss in the last recession, and you happen to really be a big believer in playing the conservative route, but you're still out there doing and taking massive action, still doing a ton of deals, still spending the money. What would you want to pass along to people that are new in the business that haven't gone through that kind of a loss, so that they can firewalk your experience, so they too don't have to experience it themselves and can make sure that they're thinking about things from this perspective, or at least considering that perspective when they're making decisions in their business right now?
I would just, you know, don't take anything for granted, and don't think that you are better than the market, right? Don't think you're the smartest person in the room. I think that was my mistakes the first time around, the probably my two biggest mistakes. You know, have the right advisors, right counselors around you. I actually had a good counselor the first time around when I lost everything. They gave me great advice and told me to get out of the market. And I was arrogant. I was like, you can put me in any market and I'll make 10 grand. I'm not worried about it. So listen, surround yourself with good people, listen to what they have to say, and just be humble about it. It's just like life. Like, we don't know if we're going to walk out the door here and fall down a flight of stairs or get hit by a car or struck by lightning or have a half a dozen other things happen to us and end us right there in that moment. And so just like with every breath you take, you know, your business, you can't take for granted either. Be smart about it. Understand that it can end in a moment. And if you're taking that, you know, you're appreciating what you have, and you're moving forward with it wisely, you're going to be successful. Again, you might get kicked every once in a while, but then they're going to be great lessons. It's the arrogance, really, right now. And I see it sometimes when I'm watching out there in the social media land where people are just like, my market's great, it's on fire, it's never going to end. And it's just, you got to know that even if it's not COVID-19, at some point market cycle, it's going to end. And you got to know it's coming, be ready for it and prepared for it, and then move forward with your life, you know, with the opportunities that are before you.
Yeah.
Such incredible advice.
Yeah, that's I completely agree with you, Steven. I mean, I think Don just nailed it. And I'd love to give you guys a sexy, completely different take. But I echo every single word he just said. We're in a business that can correct a lot of mistakes and can make you look a lot smarter than what you probably are. We can make mistakes in this business and still come out tens of thousands of dollars ahead. So check your ego, you know, make sure that you're surrounding yourself with the right people, invest in yourself, obviously. And here's the something slightly different or not slightly different, but just something that I truly believe that Don didn't mention. Have a vision for your life, right? I see so many people making decisions based on what they see on the outside. From the outside looking in, they look at, you know, oh, you know, Brent's doing cold calling and he's crushing it, and I'm going to jump into cold calling. But you might not have the resources or the team, or like, not that you couldn't do that, but Brent would probably be the first to tell you that you need more than one cold caller and be consistent with it to have a lot of success. That's just an example that came to mind. So make decisions about your business. Make sure that you're creating a business that's going to support your lifestyle and the vision you have for your life. And I see so many do the reverse. They're hustling, they're grinding, they're chasing deals, they're striving to make more money. And yet everything around them from a life perspective is kind of crumbling, right? So their relationships are suffering, they're overweight. And so when you look at the wheel of life, which, you know, think of the wheel of life as a pizza pie, and you have the eight different areas of your life, you know, spiritual, financial, fun, friends, love, relationships, all those things, are you completely out of alignment, right? Like, is business great, but your life sucks? Is your life pretty good, but business is terrible? So really have a vision for your life, and then create a business to support that vision, and do it because that's what you want, not what you think you want because you saw somebody else's life or business.
Yeah, it's such good advice. And, you know, Don, when you tell people to check their ego and to not be like too overly aggressive about what they can do and that they can break through any wall, at times that can feel like, it can feel like a downer, because in reality, like, you want to believe that you can like fight through any challenge, you can move your way up there. And then when you start believing and recognizing, like, people like you have lost a lot. My old business partner lost $10 million in 2008, you know, lost hundreds and hundreds of houses, had to sell everything and still was able to come out ahead, but many people weren't able to. And so then when you start thinking about that, you start going into a place of maybe fear or lack. And so how do you recommend, or what do you, would you want to pass along to people to not let fear drive them in the other direction, out of the industry or out of taking action, but still being able to make smart, conservative decisions so that they can last through whatever happens to come down the pipe?
I think it's in how you define ego, right? I mean, that's really, we define ego as a belief in oneself. And I don't think that, you know, having a solid belief in who you are and your abilities, and having a self-worth, to me, is not an ego. That they're two totally different. Like, somebody said to me years ago, you can have an ego or a bank account. And at the time, it didn't make sense. That didn't make sense to me, you know, but having self-worth and a belief in yourself and walking with your head high and knowing that you can accomplish anything you set your mind to, that's not an ego. That's having personal value and personal worth. And that's, everybody deserves to have that, needs to have that. An ego, to me, how I define an ego, is more of that it's an arrogance. It's a facade. Anything I touch turns to gold, and, you know, I'm just the greatest thing and no one can ever stop me. There's a difference. Like, one is a self-worth, but an understanding that life is valuable, every minute's valuable, and that if I don't keep control of my surroundings, then I could be impacted negatively. The other one is, I'm just a tool, you know, and that's how I define it, if that makes sense. And there is a difference. And so I think taking that understanding that, yes, I can put my mind to something and accomplish it, and you go out there and you do it, let me say this. I don't want to say you don't have fear, but you have the right kind of fear, right? You fear the things that are real and not the things that are in your head or that are under your bed, right? You fear the things that can actually happen. Like, I do fear, you know, that I make the wrong decisions in a market correction. Therefore, I'm going to make sure I stay educated. I'm going to make sure I keep the right counselors. I'm going to make sure I have the right team around me so that I can have the right information to make the right decisions as things progress. But I'm not afraid of the unknowns, the things I make up, because they're not real. I'm not afraid of that voice, that imposter syndrome that creeps in, because it's not real. I can put it aside and I can go for the things that really matter to me. So hopefully that gives some clarity. I'm not saying don't believe in yourself. Go for it. Go for your dreams, man. Make them happen. Be passionate about it. Crush it, and live your life. Just make sure you understand that we are human beings and we are fallible and we do make mistakes, and we have to have the right counselors. We have to be educated, and this does end at some point. So be ready for that, so we can take advantage of the opportunity that's going to happen when it does.
Yep. Yep. And for me, Stephen, you know, there's healthy fear. You know, you put your hand on a hot stove, you're going to get burned. That kind of fear is going to keep you alive. And we have to recognize it for what it is. And then there's the fear that just destroys and kills dreams. And that's the fear that we need to just completely squash. Whenever I have a fear pop up, I ask myself, is this a health? Like, if I run blindly, am I going to get potentially hit? That's a health. Or is it like, I'll give you a perfect example and I'll be vulnerable. 4 years ago when I launched my podcast, I never recorded video for the first 200 and something Flip Empire shows. And quite honestly, part of it was because I wasn't comfortable being on video and on camera. Like I didn't want to see myself. It was just kind of awkward for me. Now I love it. Now put me behind a microphone or in front of a bunch of people, and I love it because I'm focused on them. I'm not focused on me. And I had to lean into that. And so whenever I have a fear that comes over me, to me, it's kind of it's a hint that I need to embrace the fear. I need to lean into that. I need to do that very thing that I'm fearful of versus running away from it. And to Don's point, we only get one shot at this, as cliche as that might sound. And sometimes it takes a tragedy happening for us to be reminded that we're human and we can be gone like that. And if you only get one shot, I think one of the worst things to live with is regret. And the last thing I want to do is be on my deathbed or just not be here one day and say, what if, you know, I was given all this talent, I was given this God-given ability, but did I maximize it? Did I use it did I use it to my full potential to help others, to provide more for my family, to be an example for my kids? So you really just going to Tony Robbins, you got to associate more pain with avoiding the fear than you have to do with the pleasure side of it. You know what I mean? Like you got to make it in your head. You kind of have to frame things in your mind where if I don't do what I'm fearful of, it's going to hurt me that much more in the long run.
Well, I think it's just such an important question to ask for the listeners, because oftentimes people can get in an either or situation, but it's not really either or. It's learning and understanding what's possible and what can happen out in the world and taking that into consideration in balance with everything and making that decision to take a risk, but knowing that maybe I'm not going to put all of my eggs in that basket, or I'm not going to over leverage myself beyond belief in order to play a little bit more conservatively, and accepting in that moment that when you do that, you're making a decision to potentially not make as much, but you also lower your chances of loss. So this has been amazing, you guys. I think a lot of folks have gotten a lot from it. Why don't we wrap up here? Starting with you, Alex, why don't you tell the listeners, everybody who's here with us, what would you want to leave them with when it comes to going out there in this changing market from a wholesaling and flipping standpoint and getting after it?
You know, I look over your, I guess, left shoulder, Stephen, one of my favorite books, that red book, The Go-Giver. When you focus on others, things open up in your world, right? And so whether it's a wholesaling business, whether it's a podcast you're launching or anything you're doing, always take the focus off of you and put it on others. And just understand that you're going to learn so much more from listening to this, taking one or two things and then immediately applying it, right? Speed of implementation. I've talked a lot about that on my podcast. So rather than just go from, you know, podcast to podcast, book to book, seminar to seminar, how much implementation is going on in your world, right? You're going to learn so much more from that than you are from just consuming and not taking any type of action. And I realize that taking action is also completely overused. But just get out there and fail forward. I think it was Don that said it. There's no failures. The caveat I would add is it's a failure if you don't learn from it. You know what I mean? So if you've learned from it and you've internalized it, that's what I would say. Take the focus off you, put it on others, and then just go out there and you're going to learn so much more by doing than by hearing or listening.
Absolutely. And Don, same question to you. What would you want to leave people with as they head out into the world to go continuing growing their flipping and wholesaling business, you know, regardless of the changing market?
It's a loaded question, right?
Yeah. Alex hit on something a minute ago about not wanting to be on camera. It's funny. The more I talk to you, Alex, the more I realize we're like the same person. And we even picked the same colors for our show. I mean,
seriously. I know.
So our logos look very similar. I went through the same thing. I was afraid to be on camera. I happened to be about 80 pounds heavier too. And that was one of the reasons. I think I was afraid to be who I was. And that's in this business, in life, I'm going to be 47 this summer. I'm the old guy in the room here. I probably spent the 47 years of my life being afraid of being who I was, like legitimately being who I was. Even my podcast, I don't know that the true me always comes out. I'm much more reserved than who I really am. And I think the one thing I want to leave people as I'm coming more into myself and getting healthy again and getting a lot of things in my life in line that where they should have been, you know, as I got money in line, I wasn't focused on them and now I am. It's realizing more and more that you got to be true to who you are. You gotta be honest with yourself about who you are and what you believe and what matters to you and the things that you enjoy. And you gotta be real about that so you can really, really enjoy your life and live your life. And I just want to leave people with that. It's quit being afraid of who you are because nobody, I hate to quote Dr. Phil, but he said it one time, something his dad said to him. And he said, you know, you wouldn't care so much about what people think about you if you knew how little they did. Mm. Right. So people are so wrapped up in serving themselves, they're not even thinking about you or your deficiencies. And if you can be the go giver and you can start serving people in a good way, they're going to be so enamored with the fact that you're giving and you're serving to them. They're not going to care about your flaws. I don't know how many people didn't look at how big I was that still followed me, right? That's not the stuff that matters to people, but I still hid behind it. And I have regret from that. And so again, with Alex, you know, not living life with regret, it's time for me to grab the bull by the horns. And I just want to say that I want as many of you to follow me as possible and do that and just shed whatever the fear is, shed whatever hold you back and live the life you deserve to live.
That's right.
I love it. Well, a bunch of guys with some really nice microphones on here talking about some really, really important things to go out and do in your real estate business. Thank you guys so much. Again, I highly encourage you go subscribe to the Flip Talk podcast, the Flip Empire podcast, and of course, the Investor Mindset podcast. So grateful for you guys investing yourself, spending some time here, growing and learning and take something away from today and go and implement it. If it's a belief that you're going to change, that you're going to do something differently because of, awesome. If it's a tactic or strategy, go make a decision on how you're going to apply that in your business right now. And I look forward to you guys joining us on future webinars. And thank you so much, Alex. And thank you so much, Don, for being here with us today. Really appreciate it.
This was a lot of fun, man. Thank you for the invite. Always great to to see Don and Brent. So really appreciate just the opportunity to come on here and share.
Agreed. 100%.
Awesome, guys. Well, until next time.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.